You are listening to a programme from BBC Radio 4.
How many times have you heard someone say that they're rubbish at maths, or presume that it's something you either can or can't do? Professor Joe Bowler, my educator today, says anyone can excel at maths. All they need is the right attitude. And for that, she says, we need to change the way we teach it and think about it. She's Professor of Maths Education at Stanford University in California. And while she has infuriated traditionalists with her arguments for change, thousands of teachers have taken her online courses. I've been watching her explain to a room full of teachers here in San Diego how maths should be taught.
So what this is really telling us is that we know that any child can excel in mathematics at all levels of school. There are some students who have a very particular special need, but for the rest of them, they can get to any point.
Professor Joe Bowler, welcome to The Educators.
Thank you.
Now, what is wrong with the way that we're teaching maths?
Well, there's a number of pieces to it. I think something that's very damaging for students everywhere is the idea that's very deep in our culture in the UK, the idea that only some kids can ever be good at maths. And that single idea is probably the cause for most of the mathematics underachievement and anxiety we see. But coupled with that, we have to have good teaching because we know that that teaching also turns off many students.
How would you say that maths should be taught that would make it inspire people in a maths lesson that perhaps isn't happening?
The way mathematics should be taught is to bring the real mathematics of the world and the mathematics that mathematicians work on into the classroom. An analogy that many people draw is between mathematics and music. We would never have musicians if people learning music only ever shifted notes around on the page. If they never got to play music, they would never become musicians. But in mathematics, that's what we give to kids. We have them shift numbers and expressions around on the page, and they never engage in the real performance of mathematics. I was chairing a PhD viva at Stanford recently, and it was so interesting to me. This young woman was defending her dissertation. She was striding up and down, drawing diagrams, making connections. Many times people on the committee said to her, what would work if we did this, or how does this work? And her answer was, I don't know. So mathematics, it's full of uncertainty. Most students in classrooms would be shocked by that.
The problem then, you say, is that we're taught an impoverished version of what
that's
maths
right,
truly
yeah.
is.
Mm-hmm. So for me, the mathematics that's taught in most school classrooms is a very narrow version of the subject. If you ask a mathematician what they do, they'll say they always start by having to have a good question, to pose a question. Students never do that in maths classrooms. They may ask questions for help, but actually being immersed in a mathematical situation and coming up with a question doesn't happen. Here's a teacher showing you a method, now follow and reproduce it. Some students are very good at that, but they just disengage because it's extremely boring. So when we teach maths the way that mathematics is used in the world and the way that mathematicians work on it, many more kids engage, many more kids do well.
And you take the clock off, because one of the things that happens in classrooms across the country, not least because of exams, yeah. is the clock is on. You've right. got to be able to do this in a short time.
Right. So this is another myth that really damages students. The idea that to be good at maths, you have to be fast at maths. This is not true. And in fact, I like to quote from a mathematician who is one of the top mathematicians in the world called Lawrence Schwartz. He won the Fields Medal, which is like the Nobel Prize for maths. And he wrote a really interesting autobiography where he talks about being the slowest maths thinker in his class and how he went through school thinking he was stupid because he was slow. Actually, speed isn't important in maths. What's important is to understand ideas deeply. We dissuade many children in schools who are slow, deep thinkers. And that's really a problem.
They're going to struggle with the exams, though, if they're not going to be able to cope with the time pressure.
Well, the way kids get fast with maths is by understanding maths and being confident. And there's a sort of misconception that to get kids to work quickly in an exam, we put them under time pressure in the classroom. Doesn't work like that.
Is it true that anyone can do maths or just an awful lot more people than we presume?
Well, we have a lot of evidence coming out of the brain research that's showing the incredible plasticity of the brain to grow and change Absolutely incredible, stunning scientists, and much more than anybody ever believed. So the brain research is telling us that everybody can grow their brain at any time and at any point.
And in a maths way, though.
Because in a maths way, that's right. So maths particularly suffers from this idea that only some people can do it. And I get a lot of arguments, even when people see the brain research, they'll come back to me and say, oh, but we know some people are born geniuses. We know some people can and can't do it. Well, it's true we're not all born in exactly the same way. But what evidence tells us is that every experience you have from birth onwards has a lot more impact than anything you're born with. It doesn't really matter what you come out with, because there are infinite opportunities for your brain to change.
Let's get the view of what some children say about maths. They're talking to their teacher, and it's a school in Bolton called Thornley Salesian College.
My name's Craig Barton. This is my 10th year as a maths teacher, and I'm also the secondary maths advisor for the TES.
I'm Lewis, and I'm 12.
I'm Leah, and I'm 12.
I'm Veronica, and I'm 12.
I'm Amy, and I'm 13 today.
OK, so my first question to you is, what does maths mean to you?
It makes, like, lots of different things easier. So things that you thought that you might not need maths for, you probably do. It's more about finding different ways to solve things, and there's more than one way to do one thing.
Every different person likes a different way of doing maths. Like, they like to do it as in a problem or as in letters or something like that. So it's not just about adding and subtracting, it's about problem solving altogether. It makes it fun.
I like the fact that you can work in groups and do things together, and the more challenging it is, the more, like, you have to try harder and you can get smarter by doing that.
Do you think maths is something that you're either good at or you're not good at? Or is it something that you can get better and better at?
I think you're either really good at it or you're not too good at it. But if you're not too good at it, you can learn, but it'll just be harder than people who are good at it.
I think you can learn in maths, because when I first started and you said we're going to do algebra, I was like, oh no, I don't want to do it. But now I'm not, like, amazing at it, but I've got better at it.
I think you can definitely get better at it, because at primary school, like, I was never really good at maths, but now I quite enjoy it and I find it more fun, and I'm definitely getting better at it.
Professor Bowler, we heard the young lad talking about how he obviously had a light bulb moment with algebra.
Mm-hmm.
Are you suggesting that the ways that we teach mean there aren't enough of that, that kids mm-hmm. aren't understanding things because the teaching isn't good
enough? Yeah. I mean, you can hear their students who've been taught really well and are getting the right messages and are getting a good mathematics education by valuing different ways to solve, different ways to think. That, what you hear there, is the power of good teaching. That it can transform students' ideas.
You used an example today when you explained to teachers how a maths class might be held. Your example was of columns of blocks that were rising almost like a pyramid mm-hmm. coming out. Mm-hmm. What was the point of that?
So the beauty of tasks like that is actually people see the blocks changing in many different ways. So we had a sequence of blocks where there were more blocks each time. And as we heard from the teachers, some people see the center column rising and the other columns around it going with it. Other people see it as triangles that get bigger each time, similar triangles. Other people saw it as a growing square as you rearrange the blocks. So this is just an example of how mathematics is a very visual subject. And there are meanings to be found deep inside those visuals. And it's a very creative subject. People see it in different ways. We should value those different ways of seeing it.
And you focus on children reasoning and mm-hmm. talking right. to each other and arguing about what it might be.
Yes. A lot of members of the public will say to me, why should my child bother explaining their work? What's the point in explaining their work if they can get it right? And what I say to them is, when students are explaining in mathematics, they're doing something called reasoning. And reasoning is at the heart of mathematics. It's also really useful for today's technological age, and it's what young people need to learn to be effective in employment.
Because what, for those people who would say, why do you need maths? You've got a calculator.
Right.
Uh-huh. It's the skills and the arguing of the skills that
yeah,
you pass
Yeah, it turns
on.
Out that the one thing that people leaving school don't really need to do so well is calculate fast. Because in no business do people rely on people to calculate with large numbers. They use calculators, they use computers. We want everybody to have a strong number sense, but let's take out the hundreds of hours they spend with pencil and pen, working out these methods by hand and embrace the fact that what we can do with that technology is spend more time with kids understanding.
And times tables?
So times tables is an interesting one. I am not a big fan of kids memorising times tables. I actually myself was brought up in the progressive era in England where we didn't learn times tables. And I never learned my times tables. I'm a professor of mathematics education. I've never been held back by not having my
times
tables
memorised. So I say 9 nines or 8 nines?
So some of those
are you
I
still,
would.
But hold on a second. If I
but
said 8 times 9, you'd know it?
I can work it out quickly enough. You know, I can give you the answer, but you probably wouldn't
Go
notice
on.
Much difference. 72. I just said, okay, that's 90 takeaway.
It's
18.
Not at the top of your head. You have to.
I just didn't memorize in school. We didn't do it. And it's fine to memorize your tables. It's useful even to have those at your fingertips. But what we do in school classrooms when we prioritize times tables and we have kids doing times tables tests is we give kids the belief that this is what maths is. It's about memorizing facts quickly. That isn't what maths is, and that's a terrible message to give to kids, and it's part of the problem we have.
Let's hear again from our teacher in Bolton, Craig Barton.
One of the things we're really avoiding is we're really trying to get rid of this whole emphasis that for maths to be engaging to students, it's got to have real-world applications. And the amount of times a kid will say to me, "Sir, when is this ever going to be of any use to me in real life?" And I spent the first few years of my teaching career coming up with the world's worst examples. So, like, for Pythagoras, well, you might be an architect one day, or you might want to know how long a ladder is one day. And the kids can see through it straight away. So now when a kid says to me, "When will I ever use this in real life?" I say, "Well, you probably won't. But that doesn't matter. We're doing maths for the joy of doing maths, to solve a problem, and we're going to develop a skill set that's going to enable us to solve any problem that comes our way." And I think once you become honest with the kids, they start to buy into it a bit more. What I've found engages the students more than anything are the most simple problems and puzzles you can imagine. So number-based and geometry-based things that on the surface seem very, very basic. So I'll give you an example. I say to students, "I'd like you to pick three numbers, any three numbers you like, and I would like you to add together the pairs of numbers and then give those three totals to one of your friends and see if they can work out what your original three numbers are." So that's such a straightforward, innocent-looking task that any student of any ability can understand and get to grips with. But there's enough deep mathematical content in there when you start saying to students, "Why don't you include a negative number? What happens if you include a decimal? What happens if you include a square root in there?" And it's those kind of problems that engage students far more than any fake real-world applications. What do you prefer? Do you prefer having just one method to solve a problem, or do you prefer lots of different methods?
I like it when it's multiple methods, because, like, you can find one that you're good at, but then you can also find ones that you're struggling at to get better at.
I like it when there's lots of different choices and you can try different ones and you can find the one that you like best and you can understand the most.
When your parents look through your maths books and when you talk to them about your maths lessons, what do they say to you? Is it the same as how they learnt it, or do they find it different?
It depends what method it is, because some methods, they look at it and they think, "Oh, I don't understand that at all, that doesn't work for me," and stuff. But others, they think, "Oh, that works a lot. I prefer that to my method because we only got taught one method." So I think it's easier now because they understand it more.
Well, for my parents, because they went to a school in another country, it's really hard for me to find a method that we both did. So most of my methods, when I show my mum, she actually has to work out how to use the method first. And when I come home with 5 different methods, she's looking at them saying, "Oh, these are much easier than what I used to do."
I get kind of frustrated with them sometimes when I'm trying to explain it to them, because they're still using their old methods and I'm using my new methods.
Professor Bowler, let's talk about the role of parents here, mm-hmm. because it is very difficult for parents when they see their children come back with homework mm-hmm. that's just incomprehensible given the yes. way that they learned.
Mm.
What is your advice for parents?
Mm-hmm. So I do think that parents come in with the belief that you've just got to remember these methods and do them quickly. And when they see students working with very different methods and very different ideas, it's uncomfortable. So I think we need parent education, and it's important to help parents understand why mathematics looks like this. And schools can do that. I think where it goes wrong is where teachers teach students, there are four different methods and you have to memorize all of these different ways. And kids just get overwhelmed and confused. And that's happened a lot, I think, in primary education. Whereas if we actually let kids come up with these methods, that's a whole different thing.
And one can imagine the amount of parents who, when they're met with the prospect of, can you help me with this, say, I'm not very good at maths.
Yeah,
I was never
right.
very good at maths.
Right. And we know, unfortunately, that women in particular, mothers in particular, give that message. And we know from research that when mothers tell their daughters, I wasn't very good at maths at school, and they do, their daughter's achievement goes down immediately in the same term.
What, you've done a study to show that?
I didn't do the study, but a study has been done that showed that exact relationship. The moment the mother said to the daughter, I was no good at maths in school, the same term, their daughter's achievement would go down. It's very important not to give these messages to children. If you had a bad maths experience, if you feel terrible about maths, just don't share that with kids. I have to fake this myself with my own children. They'll come home with the most boring maths homework. But I always say, yay, maths homework. And now they just think I love all maths homework. And they're like, oh, I saved this for you to do with you. And I may hate the maths homework, but I never give that idea to them.
And mistakes. A child makes a mistake. How mm-hmm. do you handle it?
So one of the things we're learning from brain research, which is so interesting, is the importance of mistakes. One of the recent studies showed us that when you make a mistake, your brain grows. Synapses fire in your brain. And in fact, in this study, the synapses fired when people made mistakes, but they didn't fire when they got questions correct. And a lot of teachers say to me, oh, but surely you have to work through the mistake and know it's a mistake. But no, you don't. Actually, what the study found was that there were two brain growth spurts that happened when people made mistakes. The first one comes without any awareness that you've made a mistake. And the second one comes when you get the awareness that you've made a mistake.
But how on earth can that be? If you don't know you've made a mistake, why should a synapse fire when it doesn't?
Yeah, it's very interesting. So the best thinking about this is that the reason the synapses fire is because you're struggling. This is when brain growth happens. So we actually want kids struggling in math class and we want them making mistakes.
So stretch yourself. And if you're not failing, you're not learning.
That's right. And a lot of teachers have made maths class in a way that kids are always getting questions right. We put kids into sets and we give them low-level work. We don't want that. And we have to change both the culture of classrooms and we also have to make kids feel safe about making mistakes, feel good about it.
Let's talk about odd and even numbers,
mm-hmm.
because this is something that most people would think is perhaps a basic of maths. Everybody gets odd and even numbers. Mm-hmm. And yet it was quite a young person who mm-hmm. introduced almost a challenge to that idea.
Yeah, this came from an incredible teacher in the US who was teaching 7- and 8-year-old students in third grade. Her goal was to teach them to do mathematics like mathematicians do. So she's developed this culture in the classroom where students are willing to propose ideas and to be wrong. And she's there having a discussion about odd and even numbers. And one boy called Shay makes the proposal that actually some numbers are both odd and even. And he suggests the number 6. And he says 6 is both odd and even because there's an odd number of groups of 2. There are 3 groups of 2.
I was thinking that it can be an odd number too, because there could be 2, 4, 6 and 2, 3s. It could be an odd and an even number.
So this causes this great discussion and a lot of consternation, and other students are getting really emotional saying, no, that's not right. And they end up showing like 4 different proofs of what an odd and even number is. But he stands firm with this and he says, no, these are different, these numbers.
Like, see, you can make 2, 4, 6, 3 2s to make that and...
One of the girls is very passionately trying to disprove his theory and she says to him,
if you keep on going on like that, and you
look,
say
if you
that other
go on like this, then we could say other numbers are odd and even. Like, what about 10? 10 can be odd and even. And he says,
I didn't think of that way. Thank you for bringing it up.
I hadn't thought about that. Thank you for pointing it out. So, yes, 10 can be odd and even as well. And it's a lovely clip of teaching, but most teachers would feel kind of uncomfortable with that and they would shut down the conversation. They would say, no, this is what an odd number is. This is what an even number is. But actually, he had named a particular quality of numbers that there is no name for. So in the class, they started calling them Shay numbers after the boy that had suggested
his
this.
His name was Shay.
His name was Shay. And Mathematicians have actually loved this clip because they realise these students are 8 years old and they are talking like mathematicians, and they love that. They want to know how they can do that in their own classrooms.
You say anybody can excel at maths.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would struggle with it. Because it's not one thing to say, look, anybody can do maths, but
yeah.
to excel mm-hmm. is something else. That's
yeah.
saying you can all be brilliant at it.
Yeah. So
you stand by that?
I stand by the fact that anybody can be brilliant at maths in school to any level of primary and secondary mathematics.
Can anybody excel at English, at writing,
yes.
at languages?
Mm-hmm. People excel because of the opportunities they have to learn and grow in their brain. And those opportunities are happening all day long, and they're happening from birth. If they have the right messages about their potential and they have good teaching, sure, they can excel.
But hold on, with the best will in the world, there are some people who are never going to be brain surgeons, who are never going to be doctors.
Are there?
Seriously?
I would say you cannot take young children and say they could never be doctors or brain surgeons. Now, if you take a student who's 16 and you say, can they get to the high levels they need in the next 2 years? Obviously, that's a lot harder to do than if you take somebody who's 5 and has many years in front of them. But any student who's given the right opportunities, they're given really good teaching, they're given really good messages, can grow and grow and grow their brains to the point that they can do these high-level subjects.
So they might take longer? Or is it just a question of the attitude when they're young?
I don't think we have a lot of evidence that people are somehow special by the age of 5 and therefore are destined to go on and do good things or destined to go on and fail. I think we do have people who are off the scale exceptional on IQ tests for whatever reason. And, you know, they may have been born with brain differences. But that kind of brain difference affects a tiny proportion of people. For most of us regular people, anybody can get to those levels with the right experience.
Which brings us to mixed ability grouping, because a lot of schools split children up according mm-hmm. to their ability on the basis that, well, it seems logical. And
yeah.
it's certainly what a lot of parents want, which
yes.
is that you group children by ability and you teach them accordingly.
Right. Ability grouping is an interesting area where we have a huge gap between what we know from research and what happens in most classrooms. Many studies have been conducted where students work in heterogeneous mixed ability groups and when students work in ability groups. And students in mixed ability groups achieve at higher levels.
All students?
Well, the overall achievement levels are higher when kids are not taught in sets. In fact, in one of my studies, we found that the kids who were most advantaged were the kids who were the highest achieving. And they went on to increase more than any other kids. They did better than the kids in the top sets. And the reason for that is they actually spent more time in classroom, both explaining work to others. And we know that explaining is very beneficial for your own understanding. But they also were pushed to become broader and deeper as they worked with these different kids. So this is a real issue for England. England has more setting, more ability grouping than most countries in the world. And we put kids into ability grouping from a terribly young age.
There are an awful lot of people, though, who would say, I mean, let's take Professor Tom Burkard, who's Professor of Education at Derby University, and he's also writes for the Centre of Policy Studies. And he said there's no evidence that mixed ability groups, they learn more than when you have them streamed or set.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's wrong about that, because there's quite a lot of evidence. In fact, we know from international comparisons that the countries that are most successful in the world are those that set the least and set the latest.
So you wouldn't set or stream at any age?
No, I wouldn't, no. A lot of people think, well, it makes sense if certain students are working at a certain level to put them together and we'll put others together in this way. But there are so many problems. There's the fixed messages we give kids. Then there are the kids who just on a different day would have got into a different set. We basically get it wrong which set they're in. That affects about a third of kids. So we have those problems. And then in setted groups, teachers will tend to sort of teach to the middle. Because even in a setted group, kids are at different places and levels. And they'll go, well, I'll pitch it about here. What we want to do is get rid of those ideas. We give kids work that they can take to any level. We don't allow that to happen with a lot of kids.
Have you found resistance to your ideas and the idea of change? Because you were teaching and an academic in the UK, and you moved here because you said America was more open to change.
Well, I think I stayed here because of that. I stayed in California because I work with thousands of teachers every year. And what I find is the teachers, they're really open to changing things.
And are teachers in the UK not open to change?
Part of the problem with being an academic in the UK is there just aren't the structures to meet with teachers. It's not that I find teachers in the UK closed as much as there aren't those times when you would meet with teachers. In the US, there are lots of opportunities for professional development, which we don't really have in the UK.
Okay. Well, we spoke to some of the teachers that you were talking to today. Let's hear what they have to say.
We need a new type of approach to getting kids to learn math. What she's doing is revolutionary, but at the same time, we're going back to the basics of how do we get kids to learn?
I really believe that there are so many kids and adults out there that really truly do believe that math is an innate sense of you either can do it or you can't do it. And we can prove to them that they can do it, but that they do just need to put in the effort.
Well, as a parent and an educator, I think we all want our kids to have every opportunity. And society for so long has allowed a large portion of kids to just fall off studies in mathematics because they've allowed them to think that they're just not good at it. And in a classroom, having opinions and viewpoints from all those kids changes everyone's experience, enriches their learning.
You've rather ended up as a poster girl for this radical changes in education, partly, I suppose, because you have met tremendous resistance here, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. I have, and there is a very small but powerful group who opposes changes in schools, and I can understand how they're thinking. I mean, they learn maths in those ways themselves, and it worked for them. And it does work for a tiny percentage of kids. I myself learned by having a teacher go through methods. But it doesn't work for the majority of school students.
It has been a very public row, and they say all they are doing is looking at the evidence and that you don't have the evidence to support your case.
I think if things were working in mathematics, we wouldn't have nations of children who are failing mathematics, and we wouldn't have the chronic shortage we have of people who are qualified and willing to work in mathematical jobs.
So you're on a mission, are you, to try to... Is that what it feels like at times?
Well, it does feel like that. I go to a lot of maths classrooms and I routinely see kids being given negative messages, and I routinely see very procedural teaching. And I know that we have the research evidence of good ways to engage kids. It's not rocket science. We know how to engage kids with mathematics. If only we could get these ideas out to teachers, it would change everything.
Professor Jo Bowler, thank you very much.
You can download many more BBC Radio 4 programmes for free. Find these at bbc.co.uk/radio4.